Hello and welcome to Just Interesting, the podcast where nothing is fascinating, definitely nothing is boring, everything is just interesting, like watching magnolia paint dry with scented lavender leaves wafting beneath your nose. It's not exciting.
That's good, yeah.
But it's not bad.
Yeah. Watching paint dry is the definition of boring, Robin.
Yeah, but I mean, this is no ordinary paint. This is magnolia paint, Martin.
Magnolia paint's the most boring paint you can get.
with a scent, so you're like, you're watching it dry, but then you're like, ooh, there's a scent. They've done something.
I'm sorry. If you've got a candle on while you're watching paint dry, there's something wrong with you.
Well, joining me, Robin, are Martin and Alex, both of whom are chipper and happy to be here, as you can tell. And we'll be discussing a very interesting angle, I think, on a topic that we have discussed before, which is, are the Freemasons just misunderstood? Do they get some bad press? Are they the victims? That's what we'll be discussing this week. But before we get to that, we'll be sharing what we learned this week, and we'll be answering some questions from our lovely, wonderful Patreon supporters and YouTube members who keep this channel going and who we invited to ask us some questions, which we will be answering in this podcast. But a particular shout out I'd like to give to our biggest and best supporters. Obviously, everyone's the best. Nobody is better than everyone else. But
you've
actually
dug yourself a hole now.
Yeah. Good luck. Reverse.
So special thanks to Herb Brown, Liam Mullen, Emmett Tapia, Pease Wad, Josh Tromatek, Simon Workman, Sir Chris McCrate, and Hayden Smith. So thank you, all of you, and a big, big, hearty thank you to every single one of our supporters on Patreon and YouTube members. But before we do all that, Martin, Alex, how are you?
Well, shall I go first?
Yeah,
after you, Martin.
Well, it is my birthday tomorrow, so I better go first.
Oh, happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Martin.
You look pretty good for 50. You look pretty good.
Thank you.
Let's drop a happy birthday, Martin, in the comments if you want. You don't have to.
And if you look behind me, I've got, I don't know if you can see it on the camera, but it says, I'm two today. I am two.
You are two.
I'm two. But I mean, it's been a bit of a stressful week, and I feel like I feel like I've got water in my ear, even though I don't. And my ear's like crackling a little bit. So I think I've probably got some kind of ear infection coming along.
Oh, no.
But it's always a pleasure to be speaking to you two, and it's a highlight of the week, and it's my birthday tomorrow, so I don't really care. Yeah. I don't care, I'm good.
Drink away the heartache. Drink away the earache. Sorry.
I will continue to do so throughout the podcast, don't you worry.
Have you tried cleansing the ear, like washing it out with some beer?
Yeah.
Just pouring it into your
some beer.
I'm sure that will work.
Icky.
Probably.
Oh.
Make for great viewing though on YouTube. Either way, probably
it could do. I could also go deaf.
Yeah, probably not worth it.
Pros and cons, you know.
Yeah,
sweet ad revenue versus deafness.
Yeah. I mean, I can see it now. Just like, does beer cure earache?
You'd be shocked at number four. Yeah, I'm all right.
You're all right. I'm sorry about the ear.
I'm also fine. I'm also all right. But nothing exciting. It's not my birthday this week, so.
What did you learn this week, Alex?
What did I learn this week? I learned a really interesting fact about, drumroll. No drumroll. WD-40. You know that? You know the you know, it lubricates things.
I'm intrigued now because you've said I've learned something very interesting. We're definitely veering towards the magnolia paint drying side of things.
This is incredible.
You haven't heard my fact yet. Obviously I've chosen it on a boring topic, but it's going to veer into interesting. Hopefully. Okay. I really hope so now. But it was actually, first of all, do you know what WD-40 stands for? What it actually means?
No idea.
Wicked.
I guess it's not something we tend to think about. And why it was developed in the first place.
Enlighten us.
Well, so it was originally developed to repel water from the surface of components. Okay, it's not interesting at the moment. So hence the name water displacement 40th attempt. So WD-40.
Oh, water displacement.
Now, here's the interesting thing, and this isn't verified. Some reports say that it's used it was developed generally for the military, but some say that it was developed to be used in Atlas ICBMs to stop ice buildup on their way to the target. So it was designed for use in nuclear warheads. And apparently, my fact is that... so the secret formula for WD-40 is stored in a bank vault, and it's only left the bank vault twice. And one of these times was on its 50th birthday when the CEO of WD-40 rode through Times Square on a horse in a suit of armor with the formula in his hand.
Wow.
Whoa, hold on a second.
What?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't he be in some kind of machinery that needed it? On a horse.
Yeah. Sell your product, so mate. Stupid. Yeah.
I mean, I guess suit maybe of armor, the armor a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, suit of armor. That would definitely help.
Yeah,
I
feel like he got the wrong gist, though. Surely he wants to protect the formula rather than himself. He should put the formula in a suit of armor.
He was just flexing. He was like, he was daring people to come and steal it from him. He had a suit of armor on. He had a horse. He was madman. Probably, I don't know anything about him.
I imagine that the old suit of armor thing probably it must have just come about because they just had a suit lying around, or one of his friends had a suit of armor.
Yeah,
I mean, you don't do in London. Someone would stab you for wearing that.
Yeah, the second time that it was taken out of the vault was just when they were changing banks. So, not exciting.
Changing banks.
Yeah,
it's weird. There's no explanation of why CEO Gary Ridge did this in the first place. And to be honest, I like the mystery of not knowing. So I'm going to leave it there.
Yeah,
I like it. But yeah, I never. It's a product that you never really think about. So. Yeah.
Thank you.
The CEO rode in a suit of armor carrying its secret formula in Times Square.
Well, I learnt about a man called Steve Way. And good old Steve, he is in fact the British record holder for the 100 kilometers race. So these are ultra marathons, which is an amazing achievement to be the British record holder. Fantastic.
Yeah.
And he's also run the London Marathon a whole load of times. I think he came in 15th one year, which is pretty amazing for the whole London Marathon. And he also holds the British over 40s record for the London Marathon too, which is incredible.
Yeah.
But what makes this more incredible is the fact that he only really started running at the age of 33.
Huh.
So there's still time for me.
Well, this is what I was trying to bring up. It's never too late to get involved. So when he was younger, I imagine he did a fair bit of running as a child. But as things wore on and time wore on, as most of us do, the athletics kind of career and the sport started to diminish. And he started working in IT, and he worked in, well, I think it was Barclays Bank, long hours, and so he was, you know, stressed out. He was piling on the pounds, and by the age of 33, he weighed 230 pounds, which I think is about 16 stone, which isn't crazy heavy if you're
clinically obese, though, isn't it?
It is. If you're an American football player or rugby player, you'd kind of be par for the course. But as an average bloke who's sitting in front of the TV and eating Watsits and Cheetos, you're probably not in the best of health. And he was smoking 20 cigarettes a day. Ooh. And then he just decided that he would get involved in running. And he ran the London Marathon with just 3 weeks of training and managed to run it in just over 3 hours, which is it's quite impressive. And so he came back, I think it was two years later, and managed to run the marathon in just over 2 hours, in like 2 hours 15.
Wow.
Which is incredible. And from there, he became a professional athlete and managed to break this incredible record, which he still holds today, of the British 100 kilometer marathon, ultra marathon record. So it just shows that you can be obese, smoking 20 fags a day, and have a sedentary lifestyle. You can still turn it around, even if you're in your 30s.
That's incredibly inspiring.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah.
That's really good.
Mental.
Although, dangerously, that's the kind of story that makes me think, oh, I've still got time, and I don't do anything.
Still plenty of time.
He didn't start till he's 33. I've got some years that left.
You got before ages, I can put in any effort. Fine. Yeah,
plenty of years left. Yeah,
so many years.
After tomorrow, there's a few less, but I've still got a couple of years. Yeah. Oh man.
So the trick is every birthday to look for a new inspiring story of someone who's older than you who did something like that. Like,
exactly, yeah.
When you hit 45 and you're like, I found this person who didn't start running until they were 49. Okay, it's fine. There's still time.
I mean, they did have a heart attack during their first marathon, but by the third marathon, they
and he died a hero.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so that's what I learned this week.
Wow, that's really great. My fact that I learned this week was also about an individual. I guess that's the theme for this week, isn't there? About particular individuals behind something. Mine was about the British composer Ralph Vaughan Williams, who many British people may have heard of because he's famous. I think his most famous piece of work is The Lark Ascending, which is frequently voted Britain's favourite piece of classical music, I think.
How does it go? Sing it?
Sing the whole thing.
He also collected loads of English folk songs and is a very influential, in fact, culturally very influential, because he also edited, I think, the English hymnal that's used in the Anglican Church. So you'll see quite a few of his hymns in the hymn book. His name is on the bottom of them because he composed the music. And he was a very religious person. As well as working on the English hymnal, his dad was a vicar. He was born in a vicarage, in fact. And when he was a boy, he once asked his mother how the world came to be. Apparently, she said to him, "The Bible says that God made the world in 6 days. Great Uncle Charles says that it took longer, but we need not worry, for it is equally wonderful either way." Great Uncle Charles was Charles Darwin. Yeah.
Twist. What a twist.
Yeah, I know. For me, it was interesting to learn that this fairly important musical figure in British culture was related to Charles Darwin. Aren't they all related to each other? But also that's an interesting reaction, I think, to how people at the time, and specifically relatives, reacted to the revolutionary concept that Charles Darwin introduced. And that's the kind of thing you don't really experience much in kind of history class, is that sense of how do people react to when someone revolutionary comes along and what they say goes against everything that you believe and everything that you've been brought up to believe, but they're your relatives, so you get along. So that was my little fact.
I do sometimes wonder, like, what could science throw at us now that would be as kind of monumental in terms of affecting people's, you know, religious beliefs and their understanding of the world. I guess, like, life exists on other planets, but would it really have the same effect as Darwin's theory of evolution?
That's the thing, isn't it? Because I think most people would, well, a lot of significant amounts of people would believe that there statistically has to be life elsewhere in the universe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In a way, we'd be more disappointed if we don't come across alien life in the next 100,000 years, right?
It would have to be something that is so much against what we believe now. So it would have to be something that seems ridiculous to us.
Earth actually is flat.
gravity doesn't actually exist. It would have to be something as monumental as that.
Yeah.
I think.
Like Einstein's ghost comes back and says, "Psych, suckers. It was all a joke."
And then we realize that ghosts exist. And then throw that on the pile.
Actually, that could be one. Yeah, that could be one.
Actually, ghosts might actually be the next thing.
Ghosts are the next big craze.
Ignore me. Okay. Well, that's a good question. And actually, that leads us nicely into the next section of today's podcast, which is questions from our Patreon supporters. We asked you to send in your questions, and we promised we'd answer them in the podcast, and we will. Just got a couple of questions, because actually there were so many questions, and the questions all of you sent in were so fantastic. I think we've got enough questions to keep us going for quite a few episodes to come.
Yeah, so don't send in any more.
No, do send in more. Yes, we'll be putting a call out for more questions on the Patreon and to our YouTube members after this podcast, actually.
Very true.
So please do keep sending them in. Ignore Alex. Send them in. So my first question, and I think this is a nice question to move on to after our little conversation about science. So Martin and Alex, Kay says, which mythical animal do you wish existed?
Ooh.
Oh, which mythical animal?
Yeah, which mythical animal do you wish existed?
Are we talking about kind of in the wild? Because there were certain mythical creatures that would be cool to see. Like, what about a Minotaur? That'd be quite cool.
Yeah, that'd be quite cool.
Dangerous.
I'd just put them in zoos, though, wouldn't I? I mean, I guess they would with any of these mythical animals.
Hmm. Unicorns are pretty popular, aren't they, nowadays?
Every
lunchbox has a unicorn in it.
I was thinking of a unicorn because then at least the national animal of Scotland would make sense.
That's true.
It's true.
And yeah, true. But then what can unicorns actually do? They can, like, can they heal you?
They can heal. They can do
everything. Like. Yeah, they're all kinds of magical stuff, right? Some of them
fly.
Yeah. Some of them fly. Yeah, that'd
also,
be pretty cool, actually.
They're horses, so they're nice companions to ride as well as they've got a spike.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, they're quite good at war, wouldn't they? Nowadays.
Yeah, bring nowadays, back the cavalry charge. Yeah.
You just gun them down now. But
except they're unicorns, so maybe you wouldn't.
Except they're unicorns, yeah, true.
Hmm.
If you're a Harry Potter fan, I guess if you drink unicorn blood, you can live forever. I'm not sure. Voldemort drinks unicorn blood.
I'm just becoming naturally cynical, and I'm imagining unicorns being harvested in some kind of battery unicorn farm or sold off to the military industrial complex or
Minotaurs are sentient, at least, aren't they? As in, like, intelligently sentient, right? So they might stand a better chance at not being farmed.
What about centaurs?
Centaurs, that's good. I mean, anything with horns, like a unicorn, you just have, like, they'd just be harvested for Chinese medicine, wouldn't they? Be chopping up all the unicorn's horns off.
That's probably true.
We are so miserable. Why do people listen to us?
I think I'm going to have to say, though, dragon for me. Definitely a dragon.
Oh, dragons. Yeah, that'd be cool.
Actually, yeah.
Dangerous.
I think I'd go with dragons because at least they could fight back.
Good point. Also, have you seen the movie Reign of Fire with Matthew McConaughey and Christian Bale?
Yeah.
Years ago.
I kind of, in my head, that's the post-apocalyptic world I could live with. I know it doesn't make sense, but I'm just like, that's a cool way to go, you know? Dragons.
Yeah.
I don't remember that being a very good film, and I was fairly young when it came out.
No, it was not a good film.
It's an interesting idea, though. And I like how dragons were kind of treated in that film, almost like a natural disaster.
So the next question is actually very similar to the last question from Sir Christopher McCrate, the legend. And he asks us, if you could live in any fantasy universe, which one would it be?
Ooh.
I may have just answered that with my last answer. Yeah.
The reason that's difficult to answer is that most fantasy universes, on the surface, seem quite cool and fun.
Mm.
But in reality, would be a bloody nightmare. Think about the Lord of the Rings. You go there and you're like, oh, Hobbiton's all right. And then, you know, the Uruk-hai come in and start burning a place to the ground. You go to Rivendell and everyone's like, oh, well, let's argue about what we should do with this ring. It's just, no, stop it. Let's just live, let's continue and just make the earth that we have better.
It really kind of depends when you're entering these fantasy places, doesn't it? You know, Lord of the Rings, like, either before or after the whole
War of the Ring,
War of the Ring stuff. It would have to be in the Shire, though. That's the only place that's okay.
I think
just getting drunk, doing a bit of gardening. That's lovely.
I think Rivendell would be quite good. That seems pretty safe, doesn't it?
Oh, you just get bored. Everyone's walking around, talking all fancily.
Wow.
No one's watching Netflix. No one's, you know, getting pissed at the pub.
I'm going to say, Alex, that's a little bit racist. Just going to throw that out there.
Is it?
Yeah.
To elves?
Racist against elves.
There we go.
You just classified an entire race as boring, Alex. That's just.
I said the people in Rivendell. The people in that other forest seem like a laugh.
Well, the wood elves.
Yeah, they're different.
The wood elves with Galadriel going mental.
Okay, look, I don't know what's going on.
Actually, wood elves have a lot of fun. I wouldn't mind being a wood elf. That'd be all right.
Also, what will I see?
They look like, would you rather have Cate Blanchett and Orlando Bloom or Hugo Weaving? I know who I'd pick. Just saying. I like Hugo Weaving.
Yeah.
But, poor.
Okay, so what other fantasy worlds are there? Mm. I'm quite partial. I like Elder Scrolls. I like that fantasy world. That's quite cool.
That's a good one.
Skyrim's probably a bit cold, but somewhere else.
It's cold, and it's something you're going to get some random person just come up and stab you a whole lot of times.
Martin, you keep...
I'm introducing reality into these fancy worlds.
But that's not the point, is it? Like,
it is the point. It's the reality of it, because it's which one would you like to be? Would you like to live in it? That was the question,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, which one would you...
You're having to live there. What you're having to do is to go down to the river to fish, and then some person comes up with a sword and starts stabbing you.
Okay.
I'm not living in Skyrim.
Learn magic. Go to the college and learn some magic.
Ooh. And I mean, that would be quite cool, actually.
Yeah.
My word, wouldn't
there
it?
You go.
Okay, let's.
Okay, I'm coming around.
Let's introduce some sci-fi into this. What if it was something like, off the top of my head, Ready Player One, where admittedly it's a dystopia and the real world is crap, but the VR is amazing.
Well, I mean, yeah. No, world is terrible. It's horrible. The Ready Player One, right? It's a dystopia. Okay. They live in like caravans on top of one another, don't they?
They do, yes.
In stacks.
Unless you're wealthy, in which case you're all right. But then you've got the virtual reality, so does it matter?
I mean, they don't, that's not the message of the film, is it? That, well, the world sucks, but at least we got this sweet virtual reality.
I may have taken the wrong message from that movie.
I can't really comment on this one because I haven't seen the movie or read the book, so I'm not sure.
Right.
But life in VR, yeah, it's almost the Matrix thing, isn't it? Do you want to live in the real world?
Why would you want to be in the real world? In the Matrix, the argument is, because it is the real world. But the real world is terrible. And like Cypher says in the first movie, you know, ignorance is bliss.
He does. And then he eats a fantastic steak, doesn't he? So
that steak looks good.
It's a strong argument, in fairness. It is a good point. Mm.
This is the problem.
What about like Star Trek or something, though? Surely that's much better.
You know, I was literally about to say, the problem is that every science fiction fantasy world is a dystopia, and every fantasy world is medieval. So it's less interesting than the world we live in now. But Alex, you just said it, Star Trek. How did I not think of that? Yes.
Everything's free, isn't it? And,
there is no money. You got the replicator, so you just order the computer to make you meals. Everybody does what they want for a living rather than what they have to do for a living. And, for the most part, planets, galactic races are unified in peace, depending on the era of Star Trek you want to live in. Star Trek Discovery, not so much. It's a bit of a shit one, that. But Star Trek, maybe. You got the holodeck. You could live all your fan. There you go. You live in a fantasy world where, thanks to the holodeck, you can live whatever fantasy world within that fantasy world that you want to live. And when you come out of the holodeck, you're in a utopia of everyone being peaceful, everyone being clever, everyone being surprisingly attractive in a geeky way. It's great.
You wouldn't want to do the teleporting thing, though. Because there's the chance that you're actually dying each time, which you are, right? And they're just building you up again.
But as Cypher said, ignorance is bliss. So if you don't think about it, it's fine.
It kind of makes me think that fantasy worlds are maybe overrated. Although our world it seems like a bit of a fantasy world right now anyway, doesn't it? A dystopia.
Yeah, the simulation will end at some point.
It will.
Okay, so quick vote. It seems like we've boiled it down to The Shire, Lord of the Rings, or Star Trek. Where's your vote?
I'm going for Shire for the first 20 minutes of the Lord of the Rings Fellowship.
Okay.
If it's like that all the time, I'm in. You can just chill out. You can be merry. You can have lots of parties and
peaceful life.
And live for a long time.
I think I'm actually going to go for the Shire as well. Star Trek does sound good, but everyone would be more qualified than me. I'd be a fish out of water there. Everyone's grown up with this stuff. I wouldn't know what's going on. Whereas the Shire. Do a little bit of gardening, go to the pub. That sounds delightful. I'd love that.
Yeah, I think I'm actually going to vote for the Shire as well. Provided I'm the Bilbo Baggins style middle class, doesn't have to run a farm kind of hobbit.
Yeah.
I think if I had to farm, I would pick Star Trek because at least I can science then, and that's all right. Okay then, next question. Final question. I think we've talked about these quite a lot. This one comes from Courtney Ciron, I've mispronounced your surname. And Courtney asks, what is a hidden talent each of y'all have? Okay, let's pick Martin first. Alex, can we
I agree.
Can we pick Martin's hidden talent?
You can try and guess.
We can guess, but it's his hidden talent.
Mm.
This is true.
Good point.
I've got a talent that you guys know everything about.
Yeah, I would have said rugby union.
You can drum.
I've taught drumming and stuff. Yeah, drumming's one of them, but it's not that hidden.
If I remember rightly, you're also very good at Apex Legends.
You're much better
than me and Robin.
Yeah.
Well, I'm better than you guys, but that's not really saying much.
Oh.
You guys. I mean, we did a stream, didn't we?
We did.
It didn't really go to plan. But then you hadn't really played it, so.
No, that's true. But you are good at it. You are very good at it.
I haven't played it in months. I've got to be honest. Probably about 6 or 7 months.
Maybe we should get back on it. Let us know in the comments below if you want us to get back on Apex Legend and upload a video like we did before about how terrible we are and Martin has to carry the team.
I think being okay at a game is definitely not a hidden talent. I can juggle with three balls, but that's not really that interesting either. I can tie a strawberry lace in my mouth into a knot. There you go. There's my hidden talent.
Oh.
Party trick.
I would have been a bit worried if Robin had guessed that.
That would be a bit weird.
How would I know?
Yeah, can do that.
That's actually amazing. I think that's genuinely a great talent.
Thank you. It comes in handy all the time.
I've never tried, so I don't know.
Talent doesn't have to be useful, Martin.
No, it just has to be impressive,
and that's impressive. Especially strawberry laces, because like they're quite floppy.
Yeah, we'll leave it at that.
We'll leave it there. Okay.
So I know what you're like. You're gonna just spend the rest of the podcast making innuendos, talking about castration.
So Martin, let's team up now. What's Alex's hidden talent? What do we think?
Ooh, Alex can.
I am the best at not finding Dick Turpin in the woods.
You built your own computer. That's pretty good.
I did, but that's not really. Everyone does that these days. It's just you whack a few things in. It's like Lego now.
You say that, but I'm pretty sure I couldn't do it.
I'd mess it up.
It's super. Yeah. It's not that difficult. It's one of those things that sounds more impressive than it actually is now.
Also, I'll say this. You do have an excellent knack for graphic design. All the graphics on Just Interesting, the logo and all that stuff, that's Alex's work. And he just came up with that stuff.
Well, we
didn't have any input whatsoever. Alex just said, hey,
that's very true,
what do you think of this? And we're like, that's amazing. So yeah, cool. Let's go for it.
Go with it.
Oh, that's so nice of you. That was actually, it was also, everything was decided super quickly. that was all done in like a day. I think we should, it would be nice actually if we could update the banner with something a bit more now.
Sure.
Maybe with some like classic quotes from the podcasts or something.
Classic quotes.
Yeah. the French. Nice to be having you. Something like that. I don't know.
People say we're self-obsessed and I have no idea what they're talking about. Some classic quotes from us.
Classic quotes. No, actually, one of my hidden talents is I am incredibly good at spinning a basketball on my finger. Don't play basketball. Never have. Never have had an interest in that sport. For some reason, I could just always do that.
I've witnessed this. I've witnessed you do this, so I can verify it. You are incredibly good at it. And then I tried, and of course, it was just
I don't know why. Like that I could just always do it. Like can just spin a basketball on my finger.
That's a true talent. Yeah. How do you remember? Like, do you remember the moment you learned to do that, or was it just something you've always been able to do?
I remember like the first time. One of my friends in school was trying to do it, and I just did it. And they were like, "How'd you do that?" And I was like, "I don't know. I just couldn't do it.
I just did it.
Nice.
Just yeah. It. So that's
the right shape finger.
Right shape finger. Yeah, I think so. I think that's it.
What about you, Robin? What are your hidden talents?
I think we've established this is a bad way. We shouldn't have ended on me. and I'm not being falsely modest here. Genuinely, I don't have any kind of practicals. Like you've got tying a strawberry lace with your tongue, and you've got drumming, and Alex has got spinning a basketball, and he's got graphic design. I literally have nothing that I can use to demonstrate to the world any kind of capability or talent.
No, I think you do.
I would disagree with that.
They're not necessarily hidden. That's the issue.
Yeah, I think genuinely, you know more about films than anyone I know. You could go on Mastermind and like your topic could just be films. Any question about any film and that you'd probably do better than average.
Yeah, and that's why Alex, when you had in the quiz a couple of weeks ago and you had that three-pointer question, all on movies. That's 3 points down the drain.
Yeah. They weren't that obscure films, though.
They really weren't.
Pulp Fiction, yeah, no. Ratatouille.
They weren't, but you're severely underestimating my my lack of knowledge in this area.
No grudge. No, that's very kind of you to say. I couldn't go on Mastermind with the general topic of films because there's the kind of minutiae that they ask on Mastermind I couldn't answer. But I do, yeah, I would concede that I do have a fairly good working knowledge of films in general.
I think we've learned a lot about each other in this episode.
Yeah, we have. So thank you for asking that question, Courtney. That was the most revealing. And thank you for all your other questions, Patreon supporters and YouTube members. Please do keep sending them in. We will ask for more soon and answer them. So that brings us nicely on to our main question, the title of this episode and what we're going to be discussing this week, which is, are the Freemasons misunderstood? Are they just the victims of their own bad press? And there's a reason we're asking this question, because I recently came across an article, a statement actually, made by Dr. David Staples, who is the, or at least was, the chief executive of the United Grand Lodge of England. So as a preface to this discussion, everything we're going to talk about is mostly going to be about the Freemasons in England, and England and Wales, I suppose, because that's kind of our experience and that's what we know the most about. But we're talking about Freemasons more broadly, obviously, as a global organization, but we're going to be talking mostly about England. And Dr. David Staples, who's the chief executive of the United Grand Lodge of England, in February 2018, he wrote an open letter and took out full-page adverts in several newspapers, all the biggest newspapers across the UK, and circulated it online on social media. And he said in this open letter, which was called Enough is Enough, which sounds like a Beyonce album or something, and in this letter he complains that there is an ongoing gross misrepresentation of Freemasons, and that counts as discrimination, pure and simple, quote unquote. He goes on to say in this letter, our members shouldn't have to feel undeservedly stigmatized. Freemasons welcome individuals from all walks of life, of any race, faith, age, class, or political persuasion. Throughout our 300-year history, when people have suffered discrimination, Freemasonry has embraced them into our lodges as equals. And the advert states that in 2017 alone, Freemasons in England raised over £33 million for good causes. And frankly, I was shocked by that statistic. I had no idea that the Freemasons were that generous to society as a whole.
It makes you wonder how much money they're spending on evil projects to take over the world.
It's a cover. It's a front.
Well, there we go. So that leads me very nicely to today's question, which is, are Freemasons misunderstood?
I mean, before we get into this, Alex.
Yes.
You have connections to the Freemasons, don't you? You're very much involved in the secret societies and the rituals. Am I right in thinking?
No, not really. I've got family who
That's
are
what
Freemasons.
A Freemason would say. Yeah.
My granddad and my kind of second cousin, are Freemasons. And yeah, I have to be honest, there is nothing more disappointing than having a conversation with a Freemason. You go in expecting so much, and it's just so like, so what do you do? What do you do? And it turns out, well, according to them, I mean, maybe they were lying to me, which could well be a possibility, but you learn like passages, very long passages that you have to recite in front of a room full of people. And that's about it. That seemed to be it. And then you have like dinner, and so you go to dinners with other Freemasons. It's just a club. It's a club where they read passages from things to feel cool.
But they read the passages, they memorize them. Is that?
They have to memorize them. Okay. And there's a lot of pressure on them to get it all right.
So it's basically school for old white men.
Well, yeah, but it also seems a bit like pointless. Like what are the passages? What's it all mean? Why?
Have they recited any of these passages to you?
No.
There we go.
That's you know, remains under wraps.
Top secret.
I mean, I got the impression that I could, like, if I wanted to pursue it, I could get involved. But I just feel like, why? That just sounds so unappealing to me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's all about fraternity, isn't it? It's about people coming together to support each other. I think both in terms of, I mean, maybe opening doors for one another in terms of opportunities, but also just supporting each other in each other's lives, I think is kind of the crux of it, isn't it?
Yeah. There's the three principles of Freemasonry, which they're very publicly keen to make clear. Was it brotherly love, so fraternity, relief, and by that they mean charitable works, and truth, which is, they say, is more like honesty and integrity. So it's brotherly love, relief, and truth are the three principles of the Freemason movement. The United Grand Lodge of England adds a fourth principle, which is friendship. And they have a website, and you can go onto the website, and they explain what a Freemason is. And there's other websites as well. I think there's a website called freemasoninformation.com, raising awareness of what Freemasonry is and trying to dispel this image they have of being a secret society with malicious intent. And one of the things that's interesting is that if you go to the Freemasons and ask them, they don't describe themselves as a secret society. They describe themselves as a society with secrets.
Kind of weird distinction there, but
that's more compelling, isn't it?
Yeah, in a way. Yeah.
What are you hiding?
Well, I mean, I don't know everything. I'm not on the inside. I've just, you know, had a window into the inside, very briefly, and it seemed a bit boring to me, so I quickly backed out. I can't imagine the secrets that they have is actually they've got a global cabal and they're secretly controlling everything going on in society today. I mean, if they are, they're doing a bloody awful job.
They are, but it has to be said that 14 US presidents throughout history have been Freemasons. Granted, a lot of these were in like the 19th century, but I think, Truman was one?
I think Truman was.
Was Roosevelt?
Yeah, and, both Roosevelts, Gerald, I think, yeah.
Ford as well, I think, was a Freemason. So, of course, if you have links to the top, it's automatically going to think that it is a powerful society if so many members have been powerful figures in the society that you're in. That's natural to think that. And I think in the digital age that we're in, it's very easy to find out information about the Freemasons, about what they do. You can even find out how much it costs to sign up as a member.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas, of course, in the past, the fact is, people wouldn't have bothered asking them how much it costs to be a member. They wouldn't have bothered talking to the Freemasons necessarily. What they would have seen is a group of men who go and talk about, I don't know, fraternity or business or whatever they talk about behind closed doors in something that looks like a church, and thought, that looks a bit shady to me. And then, of course, then the rumor mill starts and maybe people start to think that actually there's more going on in the Freemasons than there is. But of course, I think the idea that they're a kind of a secret society that keeps secrets from the outside, well, of course, because, you know, they don't want anyone to be in there. They are a members-only club. And obviously, they've been, in the past at least, they've been made up of some of the most influential people to ever have existed, including presidents. So it makes sense.
Yeah,
just like Robin's OnlyFans account is technically a secret society. No one knows what happens behind that subscription wall.
It costs about the same amount.
We're not a secret society. We are a society with secrets, Alex. But that's a really good point. And they've only got themselves to blame in that sense, haven't they? When you have an aura, a veil of secrecy around yourselves, people are going to speculate about what goes on inside. And either they're going to think, oh, there's dodgy stuff going on inside. Or even if they suspect the reality, they're going to resent the fact you're keeping secrets and give you a bad reputation by spreading gossip, right? And he said, the biggest secret the Freemasons have is not the handshake, which is a secret. It's not the rituals, which is still a secret. And it's not the passages that they quote, which is also a secret. It's the membership. He says the biggest secret they have is they don't keep, there's no public record of who is a member of the Freemasons. And he's right. you do come across enough people who know somebody who was a Freemason, like Alex, your granddad is a Freemason. There's enough of them, it seems, that they're everywhere. But also, I would never know. Walking down the street, you'd never know.
No.
Except, and this is something even the Freemasons have admitted recently, they've said they have a bit of an image problem because generally, white male, skewing older generation, possible Freemason. If it's a minority person or if it's a woman, very unlikely to be a Freemason. Although, in Britain at least, there are two grand lodges for women Freemasons, which is kind of cool and something new that I thought Freemasons were an exclusively male preserve, but actually there is some room for women in the Freemasons movement.
They've got to adapt, right?
Well, it's true. Yeah. I went to I guess it would almost be classed as a fair in Wales, and there were Freemasons who had a stall. And they were handing out leaflets telling people about what the Freemasons was about. And some of the people at the stall were women, which I found quite interesting, both on the fact that they were handing out leaflets when historically they've been fairly secretive about what they do. Mm. Yeah, and of course that they were women. But I think that going back to your point about the image problem, I think it's almost a double-edged sword. Because on one side, yes, they've got an image problem of being, you know, of course, white and male and homogenous. But on the other hand, I mean, of course, yeah, diversity is a good thing in most areas of society, of course. But on the other hand, the kind of the mystique around them and this kind of image problem, the other side of the image problem, that people think they're shady, and the issue that David Staples had a problem with, that people would kind of misinterpret what they do. Surely that's part of the reason why people are interested and why people want to see what's going on inside the lodge and want to maybe become a member because they want to be involved in that gang, right? It's almost like when you're when you're at elementary school, you want to be in the gang of the secret handshake or whatever, or the place that some of the kids go to that other people aren't allowed in. It's the exclusivity and not knowing what it's all about.
The secret clubhouse with no girls allowed. Yeah.
Exactly. That's literally, it's literally that, but for 6-year-olds.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think, the reason why maybe the membership is declining is because that incentive is no longer there. I mean, like you said, in the 19th century, there were, you know, some of the world's most powerful people were Freemasons. And even in the 20th century and 21st century, you can look at like the Bohemian Grove in the US, where like presidents, both Bushes, the Clintons, Bill Clinton, male only as well, and other presidents, Reagan, were in this kind of secret club. And I think part of the incentive why people want to go there is so that they can mingle with these extremely powerful people. Yeah. There's not necessarily a conspiracy theory, there's not necessarily a conspiracy going on with all these people where they're plotting to overthrow the world, but there's a group of powerful people in the same room talking to each other. Making grubby deals, but under the table, probably. Now, in a way, I feel like them trying to rehabilitate their image is almost having a negative, going to have a negative impact on people being interested in them to begin with.
Like the more you know, the less alluring it is, as Martin says. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
There are a couple of interesting statistics, though, to mention here, which is you talked about membership declining, and yes, it is. In the UK, there are around apparently 200,000, almost 200,000 Freemasons in England and Wales today, which means that in the last 20 years, their membership has declined by about 150,000 members, which is a huge drop. At that rate, they will be extinct in the next 20 years. But at the same time, the highest growth of Freemason membership since the year 2000 has, in terms of age group, has actually been amongst young people. So I think their young membership has grown the most of any age group in England. Unfortunately, that millennial age group still makes up only 2% of the total membership of the Freemasons in England and Wales. So in an attempt to kind of improve that statistic, in 2016, older Freemasons were told to smile more in order to encourage the growth of younger membership.
Smile away, boys. Smile away.
Smile. And this is a quotation from the pro grandmaster Peter Lowndes, who's the second in command, like number two in the Freemasons in Britain. He said, he told all his brethren, there's no harm in being seen to enjoy ourselves.
But now I'm just imagining them instead with a like baseball cap backwards, walking in with a skateboard on their shoulder. But, hey, fellow kids. Yeah. Whoa, want to join a wicked awesome club?
Yo.
We're hip.
Yo, yeah.
We're hip. We're trendy.
I mean, they're on social media now. They have not only websites, but they have a hashtag.
We do the Twitters,
yeah. If anyone on Twitter, go look up the hashtag #AskOneToBeOne. That's #AskOneToBeOne.
Is this sponsored by the Freemasons?
It might be sponsored by the Freemasons.
I wish. Please get in touch. We will be your advertising.
This is my initiation ritual, fellas. This is how I get
in. This is what you had to do.
This is what I had to do.
To get in.
But so they're clearly trying. Let's say that. They're clearly trying to be a bit more open and have a bit more of a
I think we should try and get it going. Let's use our collective platform and get Ask One to Be One.
Trending. Let's get
trending.
I mean, Alex, because of your links to the Freemasons...
You're saying that as if like I have some kind of inroad. I'm not that involved with the Freemasons.
Because of your insider knowledge and your kind of the fact that you know the secret handshakes and what they read, do you reckon that you'd be able to infiltrate at some point in the future?
I do, Martin. I think I'd be able to collect their secret plans for taking over the world.
I mean, at the very least, could you kind of get your granddad's plans for taking over Essex and feed back to us?
Yeah, sure. I'll have a look for it. I'll go around to his house and have a little look around for it. Probably be under his copy of the Daily Mail or something.
I think it's worth mentioning the good works that the Freemasons do whilst we're teasing them. I think it's also worth mentioning that statistic again about £33 million that they gave just in Britain alone to charities or charitable causes in 2017. And I looked it up and pretty much on average they give just over £30 million a year to good causes. And actually this year in the COVID pandemic, they've done a lot of good work to help people in need. They've given thousands of pounds to individuals, you know, and they've given tens of thousands of pounds to clubs which are unconnected to the Freemasons. You know, they've got no financial interest. They just give this money to help local clubs that are struggling because nobody's able to pay the membership fees. Obviously able to give money to people who's out of work. And I think there's two sides to that coin, because there's a second fact to mention, which is typically, although they give over £30 million a year, half of that, and I mean literally half, is given to Freemasons. And that's what the Freemasons do. They club together, they combine their membership fees to then, in turn, when a Freemason is on hard times, they can give them financial support. And I know that that's a thing that's been part of their history since the beginning. In fact, that's officially, I believe, the reason they formed in the first place. Freemasons were Masons who traveled around a lot doing freelance work, the gig economy as it was in the medieval times, and they needed help. So they were grouped together to worship and to financially support each other when they were on hard times.
So what's the new equivalent of the Freemasons? Would it be like Fiverr, the website Fiverr, where you just hire freelancers?
Maybe, except Fiverr isn't that collective support that you get from each other. And there certainly isn't the religious dynamic. I think, interestingly, although this letter that we read at the beginning of this discussion stated that they accept people of all faiths, which is true, there is part of their self-description on their website, like what is a Freemason, says people who believe in a divine power. So they might welcome people of all faiths, but there's definitely an emphasis on you have to believe in a higher power. So I don't know how many atheists.
Is this kind of trying to get into a religious school where it's basically you have to just say that you believe in it and then you're kind of in? Are they strict on this, or Alex?
tell us, Alex. You're our
source. Actually, I did. This was part of the discussion I had with like my second cousin over this. And yeah, I think you're right, Martin. I think it's kind of like they are quite, it was something that they are quite keen on. Like they do kind of really emphasize it a little bit, but ultimately, yeah, he seemed pretty sure that like you don't have to be a Christian. You could believe in anything, but as long as you have a belief in a divine power, even if you're like, I don't know if agnostic would be okay, but when you just believe like in a force, almost like a force that created the universe, but with intent, basically,
and then some
ultimate divine being, mm-hmm. but maybe not like the kind of anthropomorphic Jesus or something. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Is it deism? Is that it? Have I just made that
believing
up?
In a deity?
Yeah, it could be that. Yeah, I can't remember the term.
I think it's just but I think it is something that they take quite seriously.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there you go. So this is what's interesting to me is that the Freemasons, for all their bad press, do quietly, and I mean that quietly, do huge amounts of support for charitable causes. And interestingly, I think individual cases. So it's not just that they're giving their money to charity, which a lot of celebrities do, and get the tax benefits as a result. Not that I'm saying it's a bad thing to give to charity, but Freemasons offer direct support to individuals who need it. And I think that's really interesting and really important to note because it's good works. But it does raise a question in my mind, as I think you said, Martin, at the beginning of this discussion, which is where is that money coming from? That's a lot of money to be giving away every year.
And I'll tell you, in the UK, the stats are online. The one that I looked at was only £120 a year for the membership, which is not much at all, is it? £10 a month.
Mm.
So, yeah, that's a lot of memberships required if you're going to... you're going to be raising 33 million.
So swap up your Netflix subscription and join the Freemasons, basically.
That's even far more entertaining. Well, we're not sponsored by the Freemasons, nor are we advocating that anyone should just go and join the Freemasons.
Although you two have been a Freemasons lodge. A hidden Freemasons lodge.
We did, yeah. That was very impressive.
An amazing Freemasons lodge, didn't we, Alex?
It was incredible, yeah. Bit of a weird night. Bit of a weird night, to be honest.
Was that, I mean, we should probably say what it was. It was like a... What was it? Like a...
The hotel, wasn't it?
It was in a hotel near London, Liverpool Street. We got invited there for a movie promotion. but it was like they were doing secret... They had like some ghost hunters in there talking about haunted objects. And it was
the most haunted objects in the UK, wasn't it, pretty much?
Yeah.
And I mean, you got involved, didn't you? I stood back a little bit, but... You went and touched the doll or whatever.
The gin box, with the genie and
mental one risk.
It was going to curse me or something.
Yeah.
In fairness, actually, since then, well, things haven't been going uphill, have they?
COVID-19 is pretty much because of that.
Alex, you cursed the world.
Sorry.
I just want to mention a couple of things that might explain why the Freemasons have a bad reputation in the modern age. And that is because the Freemasons in recent history have been connected to some genuine real-life conspiracies. Possibly the most notorious one happened in Italy in the 1970s and 80s with the Propaganda Due Lodge. In Italy, also known as P2, the P2 Lodge. And if anyone's confused by that name, it's because a lodge is a local kind of meeting place. It's the local membership of Freemasons. So there's thousands of lodges in every country, and each lodge has got its own name. Usually they're quite weird names, a bit like pubs, you know, like every pub has its own unique name. So the P2 Lodge in Italy was exposed in 1982 as being pretty central to some very big scandals involving the Vatican Bank, mafia money laundering, murders related to that money laundering and the Vatican Bank. And a list of probable members was found hidden in a secret compartment in the suitcase of a man who was murdered by the mafia. And that list included Italian state officials, including the personal assistant to the Prime Minister of Italy, heads of the secret services, the police forces, military officers, many politicians, and the son of the final Italian king before it became a republic. and future Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi, who was a millionaire back then and has obviously since become Prime Minister of Italy.
This doesn't surprise me.
No.
I mean, let's be honest, a society that is very notorious for not keeping records on who its members are and is behind closed doors where people can make deals and is solely men. It's not really a surprise that it's full of some of the most notorious criminals in the Italian mafia, is it?
Yeah. Exactly. And more than that, they found, as part of the scandal, they uncovered plans by the head of the P2 Lodge to form a right-wing authoritarian state in Italy, funded by 40 billion lira raised through the Freemason Lodge in the event of a left-wing election victory in Italy.
Wow.
You know, and it's this kind of thing that gives the Freemasons a bad name.
And no shit.
And at the same time, something was uncovered in Britain and throughout the 70s and the 80s, where journalists investigated the Freemasons and found that there were criminals getting away with some serious crimes because they were members of the same Freemason lodge as police officers.
Yeah.
Particularly police detectives in Scotland Yard. And even sometimes there wasn't necessarily hard proof that they were getting away with crimes as a result of that, but there was a suspicious correlation between these big criminals rubbing shoulders with the police who were in charge of investigating them. There was one case in the 60s, back when pornography was illegal, where a notorious, gangster, basically, who printed and circulated pornography was in the same lodge and therefore friends with the head of the Department of Scotland Yard, who was responsible for finding pornography and banning it.
No way.
Yeah, and it's just like, somehow this pornographer got away with it for years.
I wonder why.
It's that kind of thing where even though there's no direct proof, you just think, well, there's something going on there.
They were just sat next to each other at the Freemasons dinner and it was like, so what do you do? It's like, I make pornography. Oh, this is awkward.
That's the thing, though. You're, if that's a big part of your life, if the Freemasons and that fraternity is a massive part of your life, they're your friends, aren't they? And that's it's almost like your second family. You're not going to be suddenly wanting to dub them in. I mean, it is your job, and you probably should do. But at the same time, you're not going to want to. There's going to be that pressure not to.
There's going to be that group pressure as well. Like, you're supposed to be this fraternity. Yeah. You're going to betray the fraternity by arresting one of your brothers.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's where it gets a bit cultish, and that's where it gets a bit worrying. Yeah. And then, but then on the flip side, there are proven conspiracies involving Freemasons which are good. So in 2018, there was a study in Puerto Rico into the process of them becoming autonomous from Spain in the late 19th century. And this study was very simple. It just said, let's look at the group of people who formed the first government, and because they were the people who led the campaign for independence from Spain in Puerto Rico. And let's see how many of them, if any, were Freemasons. And what they found was pretty much every single person who was involved in the revolution, political revolution, that secured Puerto Rico's independence from Spain and formed the first autonomous government in Spain were Freemasons. So they say that statistically this proves that Freemasons were instrumental in securing the political independence of Puerto Rico. And I think most people would say that's a good thing.
I mean, that is literally what the conspiracy theories surrounding them say, right? That there's the secret fraternity that tries to overthrow and install their own governments around the world. And that's happened. But I think it's one of those things where I don't think there's this centralized idea of the Freemasons doing that. I just think you get a bunch of powerful people all in the same room, in the same clubhouse. And yeah, of course, sometimes they're going to do bad things. Sometimes they're going to do good things, but ultimately they're going to be plotting their power moves behind closed doors. And I think you look at the Freemasons now and they're just doing a lot of community work and stuff. I don't really see it as a force for evil necessarily. And that's just because the draw is not there for the as powerful people anymore, I guess, maybe.
Are there more effective ways as a powerful person to interact with people other than going to a lodge and meeting people face to face? It seems like, yeah, with the way things are today, you're much better off just using an encrypted WhatsApp message.
Yes.
As opposed to having to be behind closed doors. You're much more likely to have what you're saying recorded or overheard face to face in person at a lodge if you're a famous person.
Chat on Snapchat so it deletes it after you read it.
Yeah, no, but it's true though, isn't it? The methods of communication are now so much more advanced that if you're going to be plotting something or even talking to other powerful people, just in general, you don't necessarily want to be having to meet up with these influential people if they're not your direct friends. If you can do it much easier online or via an app or whatever.
Yeah, and maybe that explains why there are now 6 million Freemasons around the world when there used to be 10 million.
Yeah.
And that's why membership is constantly declining. And in the UK, at least, there are around 100 lodges closing every year. Do we think if the Freemason movement will die, do we think it will be a good thing for society, or will it actually be something of a tragic loss of charitable support for people, even if they're, it's only other Freemasons who have been helped by the movement?
I think 33 million a year in the UK is a lot of money. And it obviously goes quite far in helping people.
Mm.
Are those people who leave the Freemasons for whatever reason, maybe because they're not interested, because the appeal's gone, are they suddenly going to not help people out as a result of not being in the Freemasons? Or are they still going to give to charity? Are they still going to give to their neighbours? I think the type of person that wants to give to people within the Freemasons is probably quite likely to do it regardless.
Mm.
So, are charities going to lose out? I'd say probably not. People will just give in different ways. That would be my optimistic view. Culturally, I think I like the idea of having Freemasons halls around. I mean, other than being like stunning places, there's some like kind of almost weird romanticism about even if shady dealings are going on behind closed doors. I like the conspiracies, right? We like the conspiracies. We want to be able to talk about this, even though we're kind of, in this episode, we're definitely saying like, have they been misrepresented over the years? And quite possibly they have. But I like to think that, okay, that Freemasons hall down the road, who could be in there? Who could be plotting? You know, that's interesting to me.
I remember when we went to that Freemasons lodge in London, like that grand one, and it had been boarded up during World War II, kept secret. And
it was properly secret, wasn't it?
Yeah, they didn't discover it for decades after. Yeah, like, they lost decades afterwards.
It's crazy that they lost knowledge about it even being in that. It was in a hotel.
Yeah.
Of it even being there, knowing it was there. And then they discovered it behind this like fake panel in the wall, which was this was mental. They didn't know this huge lodge was in the middle of the hotel. It's crazy.
But I remember you and me walking around and I was just thinking, imagine the conversations that may have happened in this room. Like, maybe during World War II with it boarded up, like... What was going on? Were they plotting anything in this room?
It does make you think. I do like the kind of romanticism for it. Yeah.
And we know now that there are at least two Freemasons lodges in Westminster where our government sits. But I think it's worth speculating whether or not, in the British government's case, the greater kind of cartel with greater influence is people who went to Eton, or people who are members of the Freemasons Lodge.
There's clearly only one answer to that, isn't
there? So Freemasons... It's
not Freemasons.
Yeah. Powerful. Definitely powerful, but not necessarily the most powerful. But I agree with you. I think that's a nice way of putting it, Martin. I think that there's that need for a secret society like the Freemasons to kind of be there to make us feel better about ourselves.
there's almost something weirdly, oddly comforting about the idea of this secret group of people that are secretly manipulating everything and being the puppet masters of everything going on around us, because then at least someone is in control. Even when things appear to be out of control, at least someone is in control.
Oh, That's great. Please let us know your thoughts, everyone who's listening to this podcast on whatever platform you're listening to, whether you're watching it on YouTube or on Patreon. Give us a comment, give us a tweet at JInterestingYT, or I'm at AllTimeRobin.
I'm at MartInteresting.
And I'm at JustAlexing.
Yeah, tell us your thoughts. And in the meantime, do you fancy a quiz?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Welcome to the quiz. And as always, it's 10 questions with a bonus question in case of a tie, which has actually happened this season, this second season. We've had at least one, haven't we, guys?
That was a tense match. Yeah. Tense quiz.
That was tense. Well, maybe today will be just as tense. So, gentlemen, play me your buzzers. Martin.
Well, I said I'd go for it last week, so I have lived up to the promise. It is from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
You lose! Good day, sir!
Oh, playing it again. There we go.
Oh, that's so good.
Nice.
You lose. Nice. Good day, sir.
Mm. Alex, what's your buzzer?
I have gone for something other than Orson Welles this week, because I don't want to overuse him, but I've got a classic scene from a classic movie.
Nice.
Good one.
Very good.
That's the classic Trolls 2. So, question number one. How many stars are there on the Australian flag? Alex?
Oh my God!
Shot in the dark. Four?
No.
Oh.
There's more than four, surely. I thought we were going to the closest wins. Let's double it, eight.
No. The correct answer is six.
Oh, okay. So we're both in between. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Is that the... What does it represent? The number of the different...
territories, is it?
Yeah, there's five. There's five little ones, and there's a big one.
Okay. Because there's less in... New Zealand flag is less, right?
Yeah, I might have been thinking of the New Zealand one, maybe. If it had four.
But yeah, let's go with four for the New Zealand flag. Correct us in the comments below. question number two. How long is a blue whale calf when it is born?
Is this closest wins again?
This can be closest wins, yeah.
Okay.
Alex.
Well, Robin, a blue whale calf when it's born is approximately 15 feet.
Okay.
We're doing feet, are we?
Yeah. Feet is the correct measurement that I was looking for. So thank you, Alex, for making that.
My goodness. 15 sounds about right as well. That's the thing. 15 feet, what's that? 2.5 meters, roughly, isn't it?
I may have...
3 feet. No, it's way more than that. I may have overdone this a little bit.
It's like 4.5, isn't it?
I'm going to go for 12 feet.
I'm afraid Alex is closer. It's 22 Damn. Feet.
22 really? Feet? Yeah. Oh, my God.
22
wow.
feet.
What?
A calf. They really are massive, aren't they?
Big things, aren't they? Yeah.
That's madness.
So, Alex has a point for 22 feet.
Thank you very much.
22 feet.
Right. Impressive. Question number three, 1-0 to Alex.
Okay.
Phileas Fogg is the main character in which book by the author Jules Verne? That was definitely Willy Wonka. Martin.
Around the World in 80 Days.
Correct. Around the World in 80 Days. So it's 1-0 going into question number four. This is also a closest wins.
Okay.
The world's first commercial jet airliner flight went from London to Johannesburg in what year?
The world's first
commercial jet airline flight. Alex, yes. Okay. What's your guess?
That, Robin, took place in 1926.
Okay.
That sounds very early. That sounds really early. I think it's a fair bit later, but I'm gonna play the game. So I'm gonna see. I think it's probably much later than that. But I'm gonna go. Why not? Let's go for 1935. Why not?
Okay. Well, Martin gets the point. He is closer. The answer is 1952.
Oh wow! Okay.
Yeah.
In my head, I was thinking late '50s. I was thinking like 58, 59.
Yeah.
Well, fair enough. Fair enough.
It was.
I'm an idiot. I've seen like pictures of jet, like commercial jets online, and they looked like very early, like they had wicker chairs.
So it's 2-1 to Martin going into question 5. Tallahassee is the capital city of which U.S. state? Yes, Martin. Alex. That was Alex.
That was me, Robin.
It's rigged. The quiz is rigged, I confess. No, Alex.
That is the state capital of... Utah.
No, but I like what you're thinking.
Tallahassee. I'm just trying to think of the state capitals now. Tallahassee. Let's go for Nebraska.
No.
Okay. Oh my
God! Yes, Alex.
Is it Mississippi?
It is not Mississippi.
Oh.
Tallahassee.
It's so annoying. It's one of those where I feel like it's familiar, but...
Yeah.
Tallahassee.
Where? It sounds kind of southern, doesn't it? And people are going to be like, "What the hell are you talking about? It's northeast."
Down in Tallahassee.
Tallahassee. Yeah, it sounds like Tallahassee, New Mexico, but it's not. Let's go for Tallahassee. Let's go Alaska. Why not?
It's not Alaska.
I don't know what Alaska is.
I'll give you a clue.
Alaska.
This is a state that's very important in U.S. presidential elections. Yes, Alex.
Is it Florida?
It is Florida.
What?
Tallahassee, yeah. Florida.
Tallahassee's the capital.
Yeah, not Miami.
What?
No. Yeah.
I didn't think it was Miami.
It suddenly came to me because it's in The Office, which is weird. Season 8 of The Office, they go down to Tallahassee, Florida. Yeah.
Moving on. To all, I believe, going into question 6.
Okay.
This is a test of your Greek mythology here.
Oh, okay.
Who is the Greek god of dreams?
Dreams.
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Greek god of dreams. Mm. That's not one of the heavy hitters, is it? I mean, they had multiple ones. Is it?
Yes, I...
Weird thought process here, but is it Hades?
No,
I was thinking because he's like underworld.
Yeah,
underworld, isn't he?
Yeah. I kind of get that. Yeah.
Oh, dreams though. I mean, it's not this person, but let's just go for Poseidon.
No. I mean, you can drown in dreams, so I suppose, yes.
He's water,
possible.
Isn't he?
Yeah.
Can we have a clue?
I mean, it's someone you've definitely heard of. You know the name.
Oh.
I'm just thinking, is it? I've got a clue. I just don't know if it's too big a clue. Lawrence Fishburne.
Over my head completely.
Oh God, no! Hang on.
Alex has got it. I think.
Oh my God, what's his name? Oh no, I don't think I know his name.
You lose. Yes, Martin. Good day,
sir. Again, it's not right, but I'm just going to say another god. Let's go for the god of war, Ares.
It is not Ares. Well, a good knowledge of Greek mythology here. This is impressive. The Pantheon. You're doing the Pantheon.
I just
want
to say the ones I do know.
And eventually you'll get around to it. You do know it. That's the thing. Once you hear the name, you'll know it. Oh, again? Yes, Martin?
Thank you, Gene. No, I didn't mean to. This was Alex's turn. But I don't think
Alex is still struggling to answer his buzzer from the first.
The clue didn't help, but Hermes?
No. No, but I think I know what you're thinking. So my first clue was Lawrence Fishburne. My second clue is really obvious. It's The Matrix.
You lose.
Yes, Martin.
It is Morpheus.
It is Morpheus.
I knew that was the clue. Like I got that. I just couldn't remember his name. Yeah. I just couldn't remember his name in the film.
It was getting tense. This is going to be a close one. So that's 3-2 to Martin going into question 7. What connects the actresses Mimi Rogers, Nicole Kidman, and Katie Holmes? Yes, Alex.
Have they all been in Batman films?
No, although two of them have been. Yes, good
that's
guess.
Good, that's a good guess. That's a good guess.
Thank you.
I'm not sure I'm going to get this one.
I'm not sure. Definitely not. That was my one shot at this question, Martin.
Nicole Kidman. Who is it? Katie Holmes
and Mimi Rogers, or Mimi Rogers. Rogers.
Yeah. Who's Mimi Rogers? Is that a clue to tell me what has she been in?
I feel like I'm trying to think of films that you would know.
Oh,
you are. You are familiar.
Can I have another guess? Wait, hang on.
Okay, wait a second.
I buzzed.
Okay, I think Martin's turn to guess. So, yeah, Martin?
They've all been with Tom Cruise.
Oh, for goodness sake! What the hell? We've had this before in this quiz, right? Where buzz back to back. We've definitely done it before where people have buzzed back to back and had more than one guess at a thing. I buzzed first then.
There was two.
But Martin hadn't had his guess.
You know that you... Okay, fine. Whatever.
I hadn't had one guess.
I'll wash my hands.
It's confusing. The system isn't in place. We need to develop a more hard and fast system.
Look, I'm fine going with that system, but let's.
It's okay. There's still time. There's definitely time because it's.
How did I not get that? I've watched the Scientology documentary.
Only 4-2, and yes, they have all been married to Tom Cruise.
They drove Nicole Kidman away from him. Oh.
Was the infamous sofa jumping? That was Katie Holmes, right? He was going that. Yeah.
That lasted a long time. Okay, question number 8. 4-2 to Martin, but definitely time for Alex to take this back. This is definitely a fingers on buzzers question. It's a true or false.
Okay.
True or false. Rugby question.
Oh my God.
The line out set piece play features in rugby league. True or false? I heard Trolls 2 first.
Okay.
I believe that is false, Robin.
It is false. It's in rugby union.
50-50. 50-50. Exactly. Had to go for it.
There you go.
Very good.
Sorry, Martin. That was a rugby question that Alex was able to get.
That's okay. That's okay.
So it's 4-3. Two questions left. Question number 9. From which country do the car manufacturers Saab, Koenigsegg, and Volvo come? Oh, man. I'm not entirely sure who that was.
It was me. I
think it might have been Willy Wonka. So, Martin?
Are you actually serious? Are you actually serious right now?
I heard myself first, but then I'm here. They're from Sweden.
I heard...
They are from Sweden.
They are indeed from Sweden. In fairness, I was going to guess something else, so fair enough.
Okay, I feel better now.
Fair enough.
Figured.
Well done. Yeah, okay. Yeah, they are from Sweden. I've never seen a Koenigsegg.
I know the other two.
Saab and Volvo, yeah. I wouldn't have been able to guess that, good knowledge.
I thought Saab was from India for some reason. Don't know why.
Oh, all right.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, kind of. Yeah. I can see that.
What am I thinking?
Saab, okay. I guess it doesn't sound that Swedish, does it? Saab.
I mean, neither does Volvo, to be honest.
Yeah. Yes.
So, question number 10. Who?
Well done, Martin. Well done.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Feel a bit robbed, but... No, I don't.
Oh, it's making me feel bad. I should have given you that guess first. You had a chance. Who was the last member of the House of Tudor to sit on the English throne?
Oh.
Ooh. Last member of the House of Tudor.
Yes, Alex.
Was it... Charles the First?
No, it was not.
Oh. Don't know my Tudors.
Yeah, when did the Tudors technically end? That's the thing. I haven't done Tudors since primary school.
Oh, come on,
guys. Long time ago.
It's a very famous monarch. You'll both know who this person is.
Oh, John, might as well buzz. You lose. Was it Elizabeth the First?
It was indeed Elizabeth the First.
Yeah.
Well done. 6-3? 6-4. 6-4. No, that doesn't make sense. 6-3. Well done.
No.
Was that a slow Willy Wonka clap, Alex?
Nice. You lose.
You lose.
Oh, sorry. It wasn't meant to.
Wow. Talk about a gracious victory. Yeah, gosh. Oh, wow.
Well done. Well done, Martin. Happy birthday. Well
done, thank you. And well done to you too, Alex. You
lose. That was mean, Martin. That was actually closer than it seemed at the end there.
There were some buzzing questions there, yeah, for sure.
The adjudicators might have had a couple of issues.
But, Okay, John, do you want to buy this question? Okay.
Should
I throw it in?
I should have gone for Orson Welles. Why didn't I go for Orson Welles? That was a stupid decision.
The unfamiliar buzzer.
Yeah. There's times where it wasn't loud enough, but it played for a second, and I think that second just...
I'm sorry.
It can be the difference, unfortunately so.
It can, yeah. It really can. So question 11, the bonus question. This is a film question. Okay. Which cult classic film from director Jim Henson was written by Terry Jones of Monty Python fame and starred David Bowie and Jennifer Connelly? Stony what? Silence.
What?
Yeah, I mean, that tells you everything you need to know, really.
Wow.
Yeah.
How can you know this?
Send me a quick...
David Bowie is in a film.
Yeah, he was in a film, wasn't he? But I can't remember.
From the
80s.
It's a musical. Yes, Alex.
What's the one with...
No, you can't ask me a question. you gotta give me an answer.
Oh no, what's the one with that I'm thinking of? I don't think it's 80s. You lose. Good
day, sir. Yes.
I believe it was Muppets in Space.
No. That was a different
film. It wasn't Muppets in Space.
From
that's
quite good, actually.
Do your pointy nipples get cold out in space, Bowie?
Bowie. Exactly.
David Bowie is from this film, is in that episode, and they mention it. I'm 1986 Bowie.
1986.
From the movie. That's a Flight of the Conchords reference, so anyone who's listening just thinking, what on earth are they talking about?
Yes.
The title is a one-word title, and it's another word for a maze.
Another word for what?
A maze.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, I think I got trolls there. Actually.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did that time. Even though there was the same gap between that and the last one. Okay. But that's fine. Labyrinth?
It is Labyrinth. Yes, well done. Well done. That's a victory to Martin, which I believe, Martin, that puts you on over 50% victories now. Is that
maybe, yeah.
Top of the
table?
I think so,
but I've also done more quizzes than you guys, so...
Oh, that's right. Yeah, it puts you on 5 wins out of 10 games. That's a bang on
50%.
Yes,
bang on 50.
Yeah.
That's nice. Okay. I'm okay with that. Yeah. I'm happy with that.
I think you're both level now, and I'm one behind again.
So it means then that the next week is the 36th episode. So we're not at the end of the season yet, but it is a big one because it could decide who goes into the lead.
It could, yeah. Could establish the winner, yeah.
Well, it will, yeah.
So we need to. So are we saying then it's this 35th episode? The 40th episode is going to be the series finale, and who
I think so.
Yeah. Okay.
20 episodes a season. Then we kind of. Yeah.
I've got a good idea, by the way, for what the winning item could be. You know, the trophy at the end.
Okay. Good.
Not going to say it now, but I've got a good idea. Well, thank you, Robin, for that quiz. That was.
Thank
that
you,
was
and
good,
thank
even,
you for
even
playing. You both did spectacularly well.
Good game, Martin. Well done. Happy birthday.
Thanks, Seth.
Yeah,
thank
happy
you.
Birthday.
Thank
yeah.
You. I hope you have, I know, hope you have probably, a lovely I imagine day. You gave me a bit of an advantage on my birthday anyway, but yeah, it was
no, not
good,
at all.
Good, ruddy good quiz.
Okay, I'm glad you enjoyed it. And thank you. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for listening, everybody at home. We hope you enjoyed our discussion and found it just interesting. And please do keep on sending your questions in, Patreon supporters. And we'll see you all next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.